Okay, so today on the Metaverse Podcast, I'm really happy to welcome onto the show co-founder of Swanchain. If you have met them previously when they went through the Basecamp Accelerator, it would have been FileSwan, but there's a lot that's happened since then. Welcome, Charles. It's Charles Cao. Welcome, Charles. So it's the first time we've had you on the podcast. There's been a lot going on. I think understanding your kind of founder journey is going to be very insightful for a lot of Web3 founders, because you might start in one place in the stack and then very quickly you have to solve a number of different technical problems. And sometimes you end up building up and down in Web3 stack, and you've had one of those journeys and you've done it really effectively. So I think understanding that journey from what in your case was quite focused as a data market and then storage of Filecoin, and very quickly moving into what is effectively now a layer two on Ethereum, you know, how you navigated that journey and why. But then of course, you've also been getting some great growth metrics as well. So as I understand it, this is the kind of most complete of test nets that you've had so far, and some and really impressive numbers. I think it's 50,000 dApp contracts, over 500,000 unique addresses. Some meaningful adoption there. And of course, all of this within the context of two very hot trends at the moment, DeepIn and AI and tokens and stuff like that. So, but before we get into that, let's just learn a little bit more about you, Charles, and your background. So I know you went through the Outlier Accelerator. I think you also went through Binance Labs Accelerator as well. But how did you come to founding what was originally FileSwan and then, of course, ultimately Swanchain?
Yeah, it's quite a long journey. Actually, like I was back to the day before I started the project. I was an engineer working for IBM and Autodesk and also in Expedia. So luckily, like as from the hardware, doing the server design, embedded engineer, then quickly go to the Autodesk. I was luckily working in cloud department. That's AWS is already started pushing to the big enterprise who want to do in the cloud computing. So at that time, I was really impressed by the flexibility and the capability of scale up, easy to deployment. So I thought, wow, that's a cool product. I really like it. But the question now is like, how can we do that? Can we do a similar one? I think that is, in most people's company, that's too big, be achieved, right? So, but we didn't give up. So the day comes to the, back to the 2017, 2018, Ethereum bring up, they offer another possibility, like you can use in smart contract to do the, you can do the trustless transactions. So it's code-based trust instead of a human-based trust. So which opened a new door for me, like there's possibilities that we can do in the computing, storage, et cetera. So Filecoin at that time finishes their public sales. They get raised funds, start doing the IPFS. Then at the same time, I'm starting thinking about doing something meaningful. So I decided to do some research on the blockchain. So I pushed the first Ethereum. I still remember the price. That was $100. And the $100 Ethereum, I see like it's increasing very fast. I read the code. It's really impressive. So like when Filecoin started launching the mainnet, even before the mainnet launching, we're doing lots of tests on the storage. We're doing lots of hosting the storage. We get the IPFS. We saw like when mainnet launching, we think like since Filecoin is doing lots of data storage, so there should be a place to do the data exchanges, how to store the data set, how to exchange the data set, right? So that is something like I'm quite interesting. So we decided to product based on data exchange. So we can exchange data, sales, building data market. And that is how the first one start. We want to do the storage and at that time, we're still thinking like in the future, after storage, Filecoin will ultimately go to the computing part because you cannot just store the data. You need to use the data. So data market is the first things we're building. Then after finish the data storage, find the provider's node, we move into a new place. We call it the multi storage. We want other blockchains also benefit from the huge amount of storage Filecoin provided. Filecoin has more than 10 gigabyte storage. That's enough to store 10 times entire Filecoin blockchain data, right? So we start moving, doing so with develop a second product. We call it multi-chain storage. The project get grants from both Chainlink and the Filecoin. So I enable people to use in the cross-chain feature by payment from Filecoin, from Binance token, Polygon token to store the data. After that, I think we are pretty much ready to do the computing. So 2 years ago, we decided to do the computing part. We first let the people who is running the Filecoin node add a second engine, we call the computing provider. So not only store storage, now you'll be able to store the, to do the computing. It's container-based computing. You can deploy something like a Jupyter Notebook. You can deploy some small games as well. Then, Mautrey AI stars last year, the language model training, right? But before the LLM, large language model, there was a Stable Diffusion, which happens around November 2022. The day I see the Stable Diffusion, honestly, I was impressed because it means a new generation, AI generation has been, that is generative AI. It's not like a computing vision. It's a new Eric. So I quickly decided we are building a new market. We call it AI computing market because people needed to buy resources to the training, to the inference. So I create a good product. We call it Long Launch DAO. So basically, it's a Web3 version of a Hugging Face using the computing power existing in widely the Firecoin ecosystem. And we're building the computing power, and we found that it works pretty well. But the payment is built by Polygon, everything. But there were some things like we think in the future when people need more computing power, they need more high speed of transactions. Under the help of the Outer Venture, I already joined Outer Venture at the time. So under the help of the tokenomics support expert, we found out we need a token for certain ecosystem. We do design the tokenomics together. So finally, we decided we needed to have a chain, which is kind of fast confirmation. If fast block time, EVM compatible, can have very high TPS, can support up to 500 transactions per second. So that's something we need. Then we find the OP stack. Ultimately, the product is pretty mature. They become, as is today, become layer 2, EVM layer 2 for AI computing.
Yeah, so, there's a lot there, right? And it sounds logical now when you explain it, perhaps in retrospect. How much of it was in your mind when you first set out? Or was it really, as you began to solve particular problems, you saw that there was either a new opportunity that was created from it, or you encountered a new problem? Obviously, creating a layer 2 yourself, many Web3 founders might be confronted with that whilst they're trying to do something very specific within the limitations, but with the kind of security benefits of Ethereum and the Ethereum ecosystem. But as a founder navigating this space and effectively building out a stack of technologies, how much of that was opportunistic or kind of just pragmatically solving problems versus a big vision?
Yeah, that's a very good question. Honestly, this is something we were thinking in the beginning. So back to 3 years ago, I still remember the day when Firecoin doing the mainnet launch, Juan using one slide about shows a Jupyter computing, Jupyter AI computing notebook. That image is provided by us, because we're doing the first test about the possibility of doing the AI computing of the Firecoin storage provider machine. So he used that as an AI computing future, as a mainnet launch of Firecoin. So which means that at that date, we already have the bigger vision. We will do AI computing in the future someday. Which day, we don't know. But we know it's someday. And that's also the reason we start doing the multi-chain, because we realize that we start Firecoin because Firecoin is the only real DePIN project. Now, DePIN is very hard, but back 3 years ago, in my mind, Firecoin is the only real DePIN project because they have so many data centers worldwide. They have so many computing power. So they are the only one have the capability to holding on the computing infrastructure after 3 years. That's why we choose Firecoin as our first base. And the next year, we go to multi-chain. Why? Because we know that we can never get everything ready on one chain. So if any chain has good feature, we will take it. So our initial thinking is about a cross-chain. And so we can bridge every chain. We can get the payment from Binance chain. We can get a storage from Firecoin. We can have some computing power from Akash. We can have this, that, right? So there was a lot of thinking that. So we're waiting for the best technology at the moment coming up. If it's not coming up yet, I'm sure there's so many talents, so many blockchains, so many teams, so many funds. Ultimately, every dedicated team, we are building one good product. And what we need to do is integration. So when we join the Outer Venture, in the beginning, what we are thinking is building on top of Cosmos SDK. The Cosmos is easy launching the sidechain or something like that, so you can faster deployment. But the problem of the Cosmos is like it's not EVM compatible, and EVM Solidity developer community is much more mature. We really want to use that, but we are so lucky. When we are close to graduation, we see like a base chain launching. We see OpenBNB launching based on OP technology. That's on the mainnet running a couple of months. We are confident about the technology can support us. So that's why we choose the OP as a layer to accomplish our token. So which means that we have a bigger vision as a direction. So that's a strategy. So which means that we have a clear strategy, clear goals, clear mission. But when we come to each stage, we choose the better solution at the moment, reserve the space of growing. So in the future, when solution comes, we just put it. That's why we put the layer two as the last step. Because if you choose the blockchain technology in the beginning, then you want to switch chain, that become extremely harder. So we put the most important piece as the last steps. So that's how it goes.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it speaks to the benefit of the composability of Web3. And of course, that isn't without its challenge. I know it comes with some trade-offs that are kind of pro to deciding to build a layer two. Maybe you could just talk through how you did that, how you navigated those trade-offs, and why you believe compute needs its own layer two.
Yeah, so we carefully like review lots of technologies. We do it by sequence, right? Storage everything. Because if without store the data, you need the data to computing. At the end of the finished computing, you need the place to still store the data. That's why storage is the first thing we consider, right? We solved the issue. Honestly, like there was a lot of trade-off in technologies. You know, the Firecoin Flora in the beginning, there was lots of things that needed to deal with that. But we know that AI computing at the end need a large data set. There will be terabytes, even petabytes. Firecoin is the only chain can support that. So we have no choices. Start with that. But when it comes to the AI computing, like when doing the tasks, right? The tasks, if you check the AWS or Google or the existing infrastructure, so one computing task may cost you a few dollars or even cents, right? You cannot like have a chain which is like a high gas or high confirmation time. You need to find a chain which is really like low gas, and you cannot make it very hard for developer to get adaption. Like we also have the choices. We can choose Solana at the moment, but the problem of Solana is not really a problem. The problem for us is like we spend so much time on Solidity EVM compatible. If we switch to Solana, that will be language challenge as well. But if we wanted to benefit from high TPS as well, right? Solana is famous for high TPS, low cost. So if we want to choose a high TPS, low cost, there's some choices. One is directly deploy on the Ethereum, or you deploy on the layer two, right? It's like the mainstream, and then you take a portion of the traffic. But another choice is OpenStack doesn't call this, but on Arbitrum, they call it APP chain. So honestly, what we need, if we dedicate to AI computing, we actually is a AI computing APP chain, application chain. So basically, like we spend application, we only focus on the application, like AI computing. With this kind of sector or narratives about the market, your chain, the TPS, everything will become reasonable for you. You don't have so much traffic, crowd. You don't have high gas fees. So it solves your problem. At least for now. Maybe in the future, like we can see like an EVM system will be increasing. Maybe there's more cool technology. For example, they have a Celestia modulized chain. They have some ZK technology to reduce the gas, increase the transaction. So that will maybe happen in a few years and getting mature. So we still have the place to grow, improvement.
Yeah, and I think what it does is it helps stabilize the economic of your chain, right? Which is a big challenge if you want to offer a SaaS type equivalent service, right? Where the customer knows that they can budget for the cost to kind of carry out a certain amount of commercial activity and know that it's going to be profitable, right? Versus trying to kind of manage the volatile underlying.
And also like you can avoid some governance issues. For example, maybe like Arbitrum or OP or even Solana, they have their up and down time. They have their own governance issue. Sometimes you don't really want the impact by them, right? You're just using the similar technology, but you don't want to have to be involved in those governance issues. You will have your own governance structure for your own ecosystem, but you don't want impact by them, right? So this is also another advantage when you have your own layer two.
And so if we kind of zoom out, I mean, it's often a big kind of criticism of Web3 startups that they still use Web2 infrastructure, so Amazon Web Services or whatever else it might be for cloud generally, be that storage or compute. But of course, that is still a relatively small market anyway. So if you were just going after Web3 dApps who might subscribe to the philosophy of a more decentralized network, it's almost not worth your time currently, right? It's still relatively small. So ultimately, your solution has to appeal to, you know, mainstream organizations, institutions. So why is a layer two for AI better for the average business, that wants to carry out a computation in an AI sense?
That's a very, very good question. Honestly, like, people is confusing about one thing. Like, so we say, like, people sometimes, we say, like, decentralized, which means that every piece is small scale, and centralized is large scale. So on the computing world, the more large scale it is, the more cost effective. So people don't believe that decentralized computing or decentralized storage will be more cost effective than centralized computing, centralized storage. Right? I would say, like, this is number one. I would say, like, it's not to Apple compare. Why? The reason behind it is there are two different business models. So beyond the technology, the decentralized model is more like Uber model, which means that when you calculate, when the providers, like a computing provider, storage providers, and compute the cost, sometimes they do not calculate their hardware investment as part of the outcome. Why? Consider you are an Uber driver, right? You already have a car. How can you continue business? It's only when you are be able to cover your gas cost and your labor cost. You will not consider your car, your insurance as part of the cost. But whereas the taxi company, that's different. They need to buy the car, they need to buy the insurance, buy everything, extra cost for the drivers, right? Their costs are obviously much higher. They're doing the large purchase so we can decrease their cost and purchase car. But on the Uber side, car is not even considered as a cost. The same thing for the decentralized computing and the decentralized storage. When we're doing decentralized, lots of providers we are using is existing infrastructure. They already, some of them is have their own channel to get cheap hardware. Some of them have existing infra, which is already in the data center, has been purchased, but stay idle for usage. Some of them, for example, like us, we get lots of computing provider from Filecoin, storage provider, because they have lots of selling machines now staying idle, can be used for computing. That's why we get a relative competition advantage. So this is from economic side. We have advantage versus the centralized cloud computing. We already get customers, compare the pricing. We are 70% cheaper than them. So very attractive for them. On the other side is about service availability. So with AWS Google, so what are they doing? They are relying on the traditional bank system, the SWIFT payment. They rely on the geolocation, which is their company can hold as an infrastructure provider, right? Like US company, for example, they can do some business in some regions, but as a decentralized infrastructure, each node operator, node runner can fit and compromise with their own regulations. So if you are running the node in China or you're running the node in US, you need to follow the local policy, right? You are the entity, maybe entity behind it may be registered under the Chinese law, you are entity registered under US law. So you are feel free to use an open source infrastructure with a global payment system to accommodate to the local law. So that's your choice, right? So that's open lots of flexibility of the computing part. So you can benefit from cloud computing, but you don't really be limited by the entity behind it. Like, so this is not about like, we're using the Web2 cloud computing technology or not Web2. What we are talking about is the essential part of the decentralization blockchain. Because of blockchain transparency, the blockchain payment, smart contract, so everybody knows that without the bank, without those centralized entities, we can trust each other. I'm the provider, I commitment to those amount of computing. You get doing the, you give me the task, and after I finish the task, the smart contract automatically release funds to me as we agreed, right? So those can be done from smart contract, but if you're doing it in Web2, you can't do that because everything is a bank. You cannot reveal lots of details And if they shut down server, billing server, everything, all the proof disappeared because it's stored on their server, right? So this way, I think, is the biggest difference Web3 and Web2. It's not just about the blockchain or non-blockchain technology. It's about the conception, right? Philosophy behind it.
Yeah, I get, yes, from a kind of a network design. So maybe let's talk about the data piece, because I know that's just a subset of what you do in terms of the product suite. But as you say, it is a kind of a critical part for the kind of bigger vision. And, you know, we've, the Outlier, we've accelerated and invested in a number of data startups, some through the Filecoin Accelerator Program we did a couple of cycles with, of course, which you participated in, and some more generally going all the way back to Ocean Protocol, for example. And just even this month, we had one of those data startups go out of business. They couldn't make it work. They couldn't make the economics work. How do you think, because the thing with data is it requires a certain level of scale for that data to be interesting, certainly if you're talking about individuals streaming data and kind of you earning a basic income from their data. And so if you're trying to build out a marketplace, it's quite hard to get the scale where it's even interesting for somebody that's looking for certain data sets to kind of feed into to train their AI models. So I'm a big believer in the data economy. We've made lots of investments in it, but startups do seem to struggle to go from zero to one in the kind of decentralized data market space. How do you think startups working in that space can succeed? What's the strategy for winning?
Yeah, for me, like, it's all about the demand, right? So if you have a customer, you have a demand, like, and we need to find out where the demand is, right? So where does the demand existing? So the first thing, like, they need to go is actually we are doing the same, right? We start in the data market, then we go to storage, we go to computing, because we found the option money, like, You need to answer one question, who is using the data, right? You can only sell to the data to the people who is using it. So currently, like, there are lots of places using the data. You can have some weather data, a university using the data, right? Then there are some internet archives that are using the data. But now, the most hot data used hot is the AI using data. So that's why we're going there. And if you take, like, a Hugging Face, like, Hugging Face is one of the places people use lots of data. They have features like private data, they have places that have open source data. So they sell the storage with the data together. And also as AWS, right, you get a data set, you need to pay for that. So we need to have a place, I mean, community. People really want to exchange their research or commercial products. Then the data is coming with it. For example, I want to train this data, but I need to get a copy. And also like a trading data, right? When I know like lots of traders, they need a more fine grade trading data. They want to pay $1,000, $2,000 because they can make more money from those data. So they're moving into like a Bloomberg, they're selling those data. So basically like find the customers, find the needs, right? Took it to the one who really wanted to pay for the data, right? At the moment, we are storing the data for some blockchain companies, honestly. We do some snapshots, storage, do some archives. For the blockchain company, we have a very good income from the store, the archive snap, because, for example, the Solana and the other data generated blockchain, especially layer two. Like now they have, like they're doing snapshot for airdrop or something, like there's really, really amount of data and they generate terabytes. For example, I did another test on the Google. The Google Cloud have a product, they could a bigger query. When you export the data of the blockchain, for example, Ethereum, last time I wanted to take a snapshot about Ethereum, about how many wallets is available on the chain. And the answer is like, I downloaded the data of 13 gigabytes. So quite large, just the address and the amount, right? So those are like, but again, if I'm not wanting to using the bigger query functions, I don't care about the data stored, right? So I think like startups really need to find out it can be like a vertical narratives only, also in this industry or something. Like I know, like previously when we were in the Outlier Ventures, there was a company doing the brand name is some like doing the geometric data, right? Yeah, they are doing that business. I heard that is really pretty well. So yeah.
So I think that makes sense. So you know, rather than harvesting data for the sake of it and then trying to find demand. So you're starting with supply and then trying to find demand. Start with the demand and then maybe be a bit more vertical focused rather than a generalized data set, so presumably because that carries a premium as well. So let's talk about the test net. It's called Saturn. As I said, I highlighted some of the stats off the top, but could you talk about, give us the high level on the stats, the kind of users, and you mentioned that you are, you know, generating some pretty healthy revenues at the moment. Maybe you could kind of talk through those as well.
Yeah, basically, like the Saturn testnet launching about 1 month ago. It's growing rapidly at the moment. As of yesterday, the data we get is there are already over 4 million wallet address with daily transaction over 2 million. So it's growing rapidly. We get an incentive program, we get on launching, and we have a community increase a lot. Currently, like we have over 70,000 users in the Discord. People start using, try different use case on AI use case like Stable Diffusion, like the music generation and etc. So the deploy space, start using that. And then also the people started trying to put launching the DEX on top of that. That has been also deployed over close to 1 million smart contracts and about 8,000 tokens on top of that. So those are the traffic it comes from. So the people doing lots of tests. So for us, it's good. It's a stress test our system to make sure like, so the current state we have is about 10 times more compared to the Manta network, which is launching about half a month ago. We are 10 times more traffic than the mainnet. So which means that we're pretty confident when we're launching on the mainnet, we won't have any issue on the performance side. Yeah. And on the revenue generation part, like there's off-chain and on-chain computing because the log launch, the Web3 version of Hugging Face, people try it, people found that it's quite useful. We're working with universities like McGill University, which is one of the best universities in Canada. Their AI department working with us using the Hugging Face, Web3 version of Hugging Face log launch. Provide computing capacity to do some research. So really like in the shortage of AI computing, especially the high performance computing resource. So they're using the device we provided to do that research in large language model in the health, doing health prediction. We think like we're going to publish a joint paper very soon, maybe not this month, maybe next month, we'll publish a research result, how the decentralized AI computing grooming the healthcare research. So this is something that we're going to publish next week. And another side, like we get companies from Europe, from California, they are really looking for computing power because we know that they know that we have those power. We have the community, we have the data center. So they sometimes have different requests on the, some off-chain usage. So we are trying working on that, also converting some off-chain usage to be on-chain usage to become more transparency. And then there's more provided joining the system. For now, we have over 17 cities. And running about deployed 30,000 containers over the last 6 months. So the system really are robust, and we grade the provider as a golden provider, community provider on a different service level agreement. So it's really close to the AI inference cloud. Basically, we can satisfy the need, but still, client growing the next generation product to more. Close to the AWS and the Google feeling, but in a much cheaper price and more accessibilities.
Very cool. And so, I mean, I guess, you know, Sam Altman came out recently saying that he wanted to raise $1 trillion, primarily for the compute side of what they want to try to achieve with OpenAI, right? And so I guess what you're building speaks to that in a way. You know, I mean, he mentioned 1 trillion. Most people have kind of just seen that in a tweet. They've not really looked or understood exactly how that calculation's been made. But, you know, I think generally people were kind of shocked when that was mentioned. Now, I guess maybe you could unpack why you think he might mention something like that. I'm guessing that if you look at, you have these charts where Bitcoin is market cap is compared to commodities. It's then compared to tech companies. I think it just overtook Berkshire Hathaway this week. I guess you would probably subscribe to the idea. It's more likely that there'll be $1 trillion worth of compute in a network, a decentralized network, than there would be, you know, owned by one corporation. But maybe you can speak to that big number and potentially that opportunity that that presents for something like Swan.
Yeah, I think like the reason behind it, what do you think? Like, I think Sam maybe suffer from something in his business currently like growing, is suffering from something. One of the guests, like, I remember another tweet before this one, he said, he was saying like, with the AI blooming, growing, we need more data centers, more chips, more infra, right? So, which means that, well, who is providing his computing now, right? Microsoft Cloud, right? So, which means that a central cloud as a single cloud already have some limitation for him, right? Probably Microsoft-owned company, OpenAI, I guess he's not allowed to use AWS or Google Cloud, maybe. So that's a limitation, right? So what he can solve the issue? One way, trying to avoid using NVIDIA GPUs or using less so that he can bypass the production or quotation from NVIDIA, right? Then, so probably like, because he need to buy GPUs from NVIDIA. Google Cloud, AWS, they all buy GPU from cloud, from NVIDIA, right? So get it, which means that his computers also buying from same source. So probably he's thinking about building a new chip, AI chip. Building a chip will cost a lot of money, right? Imagine that Google building the M2, that spends a couple of years, lots of money, like failures, success, 10 years of development. So I think he's designing for something 10 years, not 1 year. And on the other side, data center, he already mentioned that. If he doesn't want to using AWS or Google, what he has to do? He needs data centers holding his AI machines running. So, which means he's not using Microsoft's competitor's product, but also be able to not limit his growth. So he needs a data center, need a power, the GPUs, etc. So those everything that cost a lot of money. Building a data center itself will cost more than hundreds of million dollars, right? If you have 10 of the data centers, that was close to $1 billion. So that was a lot of money you spend. For us, I feel like it's an opportunity for decentralized computing. So with decentralized computing, you don't really need to care about AWS Google, right? Even AWS Google can be our provider. For example, we have some Google instance running as well to contribute to our network, because sometimes people really want some specific provider computing, and we found Google is there. And by the way, Google gave us credits as Web3 startups. Google gave us over $100,000 credits for that, so we can use that. They can become vendor. We're talking with OVH Cloud. So we're not really direct competitor with AWS, but we are part of the big cloud computing environment as well. And the other side is what we can get is from data center. You get the latest version of GPUs. For example, the latest version of H200 F40S, right? Probably AWS Google don't have it. And you need that. How can you do that? Our community, the community providers, they have the latest version. You can direct access. So the latest version of GPUs perform your AI training in a cost-effective way. So this is another advantage that we get. And this is another reason people turning to us instead of us, Google, and OVH. So we have a conversation with some of those big cloud providers. We ask the latest version, they say, like, well, sorry. So majorly, they will say sorry for two reasons. Either they don't have enough high-end GPUs, or they don't have the GPUs in the region you want. So with a decentralized computing network as we build, access to the global data centers with those resources people have been already purchased, we are be able to matching the people's demand on this way. So imagine we still need one technology, which currently actually I'm looking for and I want a partnership with the company who owns it. If we can break down the big computing models to split it or distributed on small GPUs, for example, 10,000, right? 100,000 GPUs, then those distributed AI training will using our network much more efficiently and can generate more output. So that's some research in AI, probably as Swan Chain will be performed as the next step in the milestone. So which means that from this year, we're turning from the pure infrastructure provider become the AI pioneers in distributed AI computing modeling. So that's something like we're going to do this year.
Yeah, so very exciting and clear. You know, you kind of get the customization, your performance, localization. So you get all that optionality. You get the kind of cost benefit. And, you know, for those that have that, a growing requirement, an exponential requirement for this stuff who are working in the domain of AI, they don't have the upfront cost, which they may or may not recoup, right? The cost, the investment is made by the network and it's used on demand by the AI company so they can focus on being an AI company. So I think very kind of strong proposition there. So you mentioned earlier the kind of the token design aspect of what you got out of going through the accelerator program. Can you just talk about how and why a token is then needed? Is that like the final ingredient in a way on top of the network to kind of coordinate it?
Yeah, that's a very interesting story. Honestly, in the beginning, we think like we don't need the on-chain. We just need the using take advantage from multi-chains, and we have multi-chain tokens, and we just use it to like a payment methodology and the bridging. Then we found that's really, really hard. So because when working with Outer Lead Venture Accelerator Program, we get one feedback. That's actually a pretty good question. How can you keep liquidity on each pair of your token to every chain, right? So that brings another, yes, that's impossible. You cannot have like token pairs in 20, 50 chains, right? It's better to ask them bridging to one chain. And on the demand side, people can pay with different tokens. But on the provider side, make them life easier, right? I'm a competing provider. I don't want to get a basket of 10 different tokens, 20 different tokens, or even 50 different tokens, right? It's just one token as a provider, as an income. And you need to figure out how to manage all the tokens, the bridgings, demands, right? And different currencies from different way, right? But just like AWS or Google, right? They probably like offer services to 100 countries, but as their providers, maybe they're only paying US dollar, right? So the same thing. We maybe have a lot of demands from different blockchains using our computing resource and storage resource. The moment we pay our one, there should be only one token. So there's one thing, which means that we have strong need to focus on one token. And then how the one token fits on one chain? Because the governance you have mentioned before, and also have our own treasury management, how to doing the staking, how to do the governance, and how to do the voting right. We strongly need something like working and also on the traffic side. So there's enough benefits for us for seeing. And then we say like we perform the ideas, we launch the sudden testnet. When people really accept the ideas, the Flare is very comfortable using it, and performance-wise, we don't have issue. EVM compatible makes them extremely easy to migrate different smart contracts. They have already migrated over 1 million contracts from other chains to the Swan chain, right? So all those are the technologies. But there's more things we learned during the accelerator. I don't know. There are details about that. If people are interested, they should join as a lender, get access, then they can benefit from the experts who can provide not just only the tokenomics design, but also marketing, business, everything. Like that's a lot of things. I would say like that's a best ever course I have been learned. I think it's much better than MBA.
Well, Web3 MBA, there you go. I mean, and I appreciate you saying that. I know that the team that worked with you closely in that program said it was a real pleasure. And I guess there's like one additional benefit to having decentralized compute, storage, all of this stuff connected up to Web3 and then ultimately DeFi is, I guess you can have a futures market as well, right? Because it is effectively a decentralized financial system as well as a decentralized technology stack. So do you expect to start to see, you know, people kind of building futures products by leveraging the kind of Swan network and where demand's coming from? And
I believe they already have that. It's just not telling us yet. Because I see like people has deployed different tokens. I see the name like ZKSync token. I see USDC, USDT, those names deployed on testnet. This is not by accident. They are by purpose, I would say like. I'm assuming like there was a different DAG system. It's just waiting to see, like waiting for different program, waiting on like we talking to them. So we are going to have incentive program, dev grounds so to encourage them to start working on that, right? I would say like we have our own traffic because during the competing provider, like ZK messages, like UBI messages, etc., those messages. But I would say like a majority transaction must come from those DAGs and the futures market, the DeFi market. I think that's the most traffic comes.
Well, look, Charles, thanks so much for coming on, sharing your founder journey. Lots of insights there for other founders in the space that are navigating the technology stack, you know, figuring out how to evolve their proposition. Really excited to see what happens with Mainnet. Do you have a ETA or are you going to kind of...
Yeah, we estimated like we were going to launch the Mainnet Q2, which is really approaching. We are doing the final test about lots of important things. We're probably like still doing one or two patches to the like because recent like 4.8.4.4 those upgrades will have a significant impact about the mainnet, which has caused more will cost less gas and increase performance by one step further. But other than that, we think we're pretty much ready to launch the Manta in Q2.
Okay. All right. Well, there you go. So something to look forward to imminently. Good luck with that. And thanks for coming on, Charles.
Thank you.